Okay, gang, cup of gas. You're gonna flip your lids when you see the swell idea the nerds have come up with. Please pick up your tins. Now, you'll see that they're connected by string, and when you talk in that end, Polly, David over here can hear you. Isn't that the cat's pajamas? Don't be a wit rag now, Polly. Say hello.
Hello, Dave.
You see? No sweat.
Times have changed. So should your PBX. Get Virto from Vox Orion, a hosted IP PBX for your business that offers fantastic savings from 65 Rand per user per month. For more info, SMS your name to 45678.
And we'll call you.
Welcome to Talk Central, the business technology podcast brought to you by South Africa's technology news leader at techcentral.co.za. I'm Duncan McLeod, and as usual, I'm here with Craig Wilson. Hi, Craig.
Hi, Duncan.
So a bit of a slow news day today, but it's certainly been a lot happening since we recorded our last show.
There has. So many things have happened in the last few weeks. It's been a little bit crazy, and perhaps we should be thankful for the respite.
Indeed. Time to sit down and gives us a bit of time to sit down and record one of these podcasts. So you went to Pretoria on Friday to the, where was it, GCIS?
That's right, yeah.
Government, what does that stand for? Government Communication Information Services or something like that.
Something on those lines, yeah.
For the big announcement on the Square Kilometre Array Radio Telescope project. What was your take out of it?
Well, and big announcement it was, that it was absolutely packed, just full to the brim with journalists and photographers and videographers, and you really couldn't move in there. It was interesting, you know, at first I think there was quite a lot of disappointment, as you doubtless have heard, the project is now to be shared between South Africa and Australia, which was, I think, one of the outcomes we expected, potentially. I think most people felt it was either going to be shared or South Africa was going to win it.
Yes.
But that it seemed unlikely that Australia would get it outright. There was quite a lot of sort of disappointment, I think, from the sort of assembled crowd. But you know, the Minister for Science and Technology, Naledi Pandor, went to great lengths to suggest that this was still to be viewed as a win for South Africa, and said that she was ecstatic that we'd gotten the lion's share, or at least sort of they were talking figures around 70% of the project. There was also the suggestion that parts of it are better suited to Australia, with other some of the low frequency equipment, with other parts being better suited to the Karoo. But there was the suggestion that perhaps there was a sort of political angle behind the scenes, and that there are certain things we're not quite privy to that may go some way to explaining why the decision went this way.
There was an interesting piece in the Sun, I think it was in the Sunday Times yesterday, that speculated that it were the fact that the politicians were putting pressure on the SKA organization to make a decision, actually forced their hand to give it to both countries rather than making a decision in favor only of South Africa. Also quite interested to see that the technical committee, there was that leak in the Australian media a couple of weeks ago suggesting that the technical committee had proposed that the whole project go to South Africa.
Indeed.
Quite interesting to read that the reason for that was that the Karoo is sitting at a much higher altitude, an average altitude of around 1,000 meters above sea level.
Which, oh, that's interesting. I didn't realize that factored in.
Helps with the science, sure.
Right. Because I'd imagine, I mean, either area seems to be suitably desolate, so you needn't worry about radio frequency interference or pollution or similar such problems.
Yes.
Although I don't think pollution's a problem with radio waves. But
well, I don't know. Is it? Maybe.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, this equipment is terribly, terribly sensitive. Mm. But one of the interesting things to come out of this as well, though, is that the project is going to cost more as a result, because there are going to be certain infrastructure that will have to be duplicated in Australia.
Yes.
That wouldn't have to be if it were done solely here.
Yes.
And also that, you know, now you have a split project. So whether it's, you know, high-ranking officials moving between the two sites, or, you know, there are various other costs that are going to be added onto this. But nevertheless, it is still going to be an enormous cash injection for South Africa in terms of investment and the actual money spent on the equipment. And moreover, it's still going to attract high-caliber scientists. And
yes.
I mean, that, I think, in many ways was the biggest benefit of the project.
Now, I guess we have to see, wait and see whether the South Africans and the Australians can get along.
Well, indeed. And then, of course, there's the issue of fracking, which some people brought up and say, well, you know, wouldn't this be a problem in the Karoo with the sensitivity of the telescopes? But I think we'll have to wait and see on that one. There was certainly a lot of talk about whether Pandor had spoken to her Australian counterpart. And she laughed and said she would do that in days to come once she'd relaxed a little bit and calmed down.
Yeah. But, yeah, no, absolutely a great decision for South Africa, and I think a great testament to our scientific community that we can actually pull down a major project like this, and well done to the South African office of the SKA bid project.
Absolutely, and so nice that other seemingly petty fights about things like paintings didn't entirely overshadow what is undeniably great news for SA.
Indeed, indeed. It's a strange week last week, from the Spear to the SKA.
Yes,
indeed. Great contrast from one to the other. But, great stuff. So I'm actually looking forward, hopefully one of these days or one of these years, to travel to the Northern Cape to go and actually visit the site once construction starts and have a look at some of the technology behind this.
Well, of course, I mean, there's some already in place with the sort of Meerkat project and things that will be assimilated into the SKA.
Yes.
But it'll be great once the large sort of 5-kilometer concentrated area of dishes has been built, although that may not, of course, be quite as big anymore. They were a little bit light on some of the technical details. And
yeah.
I'm sure it's out there, though, for those who care to see it. But it's unclear.
They were going to build 4,000 dishes right across Southern Africa, right?
Indeed. And it's unclear whether we will still see 70% of those or how exactly it works, you know.
Yes.
It's not necessarily a dish-by-dish arrangement, but
right.
We'll still be seeing the bulk of them. And they also mentioned that these African partners, you know, there were half a dozen or more African countries that lent support to the project. Each of the partners was guaranteed a site of their own or at least a small selection of dishes. And each of these will still get some sort of involvement in the project, even if it has been somewhat downscaled.
Yes. Okay, cool. Well, yeah, this town, I don't know if you've ever been to Carnarvon.
I haven't,
in the Northern Cape. Yeah, apparently it's pretty desolate out there, as you can imagine, in the middle of the Kalahari Desert.
Indeed.
Well, no, not Kalahari, Karoo.
The Karoo, yeah.
But, it'll be interesting to see how that town grows now.
You know, on the back of
this, certainly going to be a lot of scientists going traveling through there and spending time there.
Absolutely.
I was fortunate enough to travel for a friend's wedding down to Sutherland a couple of years ago, which is another scientific community with the big salt observatory.
Right.
About 10 kilometres out of town, also a desolate place.
And freezing at night.
Freezing cold, unbelievable. Yeah, it was. I think the one night it went down to about -8. While we were there, but the locals were walking around in t-shirts saying, "This isn't that cold. Come back when it's really winter." You know, apparently, you can go down to -20 there. But
you see a lot of growth around Sutherland.
No, not really. And chatting to some of the B&B and the hotel owners there and stuff, and they were quite critical of the scientists because apparently they all go and work up at the Salt Observatory at the big telescope there, and they never come into town.
Right.
They just keep to themselves.
Right. Well, meanwhile, when I was, I went down to Cape Town for the WAX cable launch a couple of weeks back, and we went out to Azefontein where the landing station is, and there was the suggestion that there might be at least some more action in the area on the back of it, and that the local community was being encouraged to, you know, sell to sort of produce to visitors, and that they would hopefully see some benefit from this landing station in addition to the benefit that it brings to those in the, you know, the city proper.
Yeah, there was a piece somewhere, I can't remember where I read it, that that Azefontein doesn't have internet access.
No, amusingly, yeah. Which I believe they're also seeking to rectify rather quickly, and it's a little bit of egg on the face about that. Yes.
Yeah, well, they could certainly make a case for getting fibre to the home there.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. Anyway. You know, interesting parts of this country, rural parts of this country, which are getting some interesting tech. I remember travelling down a couple of years ago to Mthunzini on the northern KZN coastline. Tiny little holiday town in the middle of nowhere. That's now the site of both the Easy and Seacom and Safe submarine cable landings. You never say it. There's this nondescript little building sitting about 500 metres from the beach, you know, housing the Seacom landing station, for example. And around it, there's nothing. Just this
there's no indication.
A sleepy town.
Well, we were very amused when we were in Azefontein that the cell phone reception wasn't particularly good either.
Yeah.
And we're thinking, you know, it's a site of connectivity, but connectivity is terrible.
Yeah. I'm sure it won't be long before one or more of the mobile operators uses that landing station as an actual site for a base station.
Indeed, indeed.
Yeah. What is there? What is in Azefontein?
I don't know. We didn't go into town proper. We didn't see very much.
Is it not in town proper?
No. It's just out. Out also, beach. Just a little bit off the beach.
Yeah. Okay.
Nondescript sort of yellow brick building.
Yes. Yes.
With a small sort of telecom sign and otherwise very little indication as to what purpose it serves.
Yes.
Down the end of a dirt road as well.
Yeah.
But you wonder what things will spring up around these in time.
Good. Moving on. ABSA has had a bit of a torrid time of it in the last couple of days.
They have. And the worst of it is we're not entirely sure why, are we?
Yeah, they're not. They're being pretty cagey about what the reason is, aren't they?
They are, yeah.
I suppose at least they're not doing an F&B and blaming it on City Power.
This is true, yes. although, I mean, when we think about that, it seems, for the large part, F&B managed to get away with that one. No one
did.
Really, I mean, there were some...
Chris Yelland, I forget which publication he works for, but Chris Yelland, who's a sort of expert on matters ESCOM and electricity, took them apart for blaming the...
blaming a power surge, I think it was.
Yeah, yes. Massive power surge, and it was apparently quite clearly not a power surge.
But interestingly, you know, that tactic, in a sense, is arguably was more effective, even though they we're not entirely sure we buy it.
Mm.
Most people seem to, and just let it slide. The problem is EPSA has been very quiet about what the cause is, and which doesn't inspire confidence. I know on Friday there was a lot of backlash on social media from people wanting to get on, and of course it couldn't have happened at a worse time because
25th of the month,
25th,
payday.
Yeah, generally payday, and people wanting to pay their bills, and you know, it's the worst possible time for it to happen. But we haven't been able to figure out what actually caused it. I spoke to some of the team at EPSA this morning and asked them about what had perhaps caused it, whether there was any sort of technical info, and they unfortunately haven't been forthcoming. But they reassured us that the service is up and running, albeit I think there were still some speed concerns.
Mm.
But it is curious. One has to wonder what has happened. And it's also not great considering they've just launched their new EPSA online sort of revamped web portal.
Yeah, and that obviously immediately led people to ask questions about whether that had caused the problem.
Indeed. Of course, they've suggested it hasn't. Mm. But not the best week for EPSA, no. Yeah.
And from a PR perspective, I don't think they handled it that well either. They don't have a Twitter account yet, although they're making noises about potentially launching one. When the FMB system went down, Michael Yordan was actively in the data center, tweeting from the data center. You know, Facebook had EPSA had a Facebook page, which they were updating every hour or so. But I think they could have done a better job in explaining exactly what went wrong and getting out there and just talking to customers
Indeed.
Yeah. Maybe some marketing lessons to be learned there.
All these other things we learn from all of these sort of events when people get it wrong is just how you need to respond. And it's just not acceptable to take a long time to tell customers what's going on anymore. You've got to have the information out there as soon as possible.
Yeah.
As we learned also with Rim, with their outage last year. Mm. I mean, the first response came something like 4 or 5 hours after the outage.
Yes.
And in this day and age, you just cannot get away with that. You know, as soon as you identify a problem, you should immediately be working on a message to get out to market.
Yeah. And I logged onto the EPSA site this morning. There's no explanation on the homepage about what went wrong or even that a problem happened.
Indeed.
I think that's the least companies should do when they have a sort of outage of this nature is at least... try and explain, even if it is a highly technically complex issue.
Indeed.
There are always ways of explaining it in plain language and
absolutely,
keeping
yeah.
customers up to date. I mean, what EPSA did suggest was they're going to keep the branches open, I think, as they said, until around 6 p.m. to allow people to go and pay salaries, you know, go into the branch
sure.
and stuff. What they neglected to point out is that going into a branch and doing transactions behind the counter is an extremely expensive way of going about your banking.
Yes. And what not just from a time perspective.
No, indeed. I wasn't even thinking of the time aspect of it. Just in terms of bank fees, what EPSA should have done is they said, sorry guys, our website is down, but our branches are available. You go to our branches, and any transactions you do in our branches today, we're going to rescind all fees.
Yep. And then you also turn it into a positive message in one fell swoop.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's interesting to watch how different companies respond to these sort of things. We'll see if we can find out more info from them later in the week as to what actually caused it. But suspicion is we may never know.
We may never know, indeed. The conspiracy theorists are already quick to point out that EPSA has been on the quiet, has been ditching its IT staff recently. They served termination notices on 140 IT employees that then backed down after union pressure. That's right. It's very conspiratorial, but it is interesting that they're letting go of IT workers, and then their website goes down.
Indeed.
But let's not entertain that. Speculation.
Particularly with so much other news to cover.
Indeed. We haven't recorded a podcast for a while, so I don't think we should spend too much time on this because it has been covered to death on Tech Central already. But the whole fight that broke out a couple of weeks ago now between Cell C and Vodacom.
Indeed.
Cell C, as you'll recall, cut its rates to 99 cents per minute from the first second for prepaid. Its data rates, ad hoc data rates, from 2 rand a megabyte to 99 cents a megabyte. Vodacom reacted within minutes. In fact, the Vodacom press release came through a couple of minutes before the embargo on the Cell C press release we'd received earlier that morning expired. They'd clearly got wind of Cell C's plans. We're not quite sure when, although I hear that it may have been on Monday. And yeah, they reacted quickly with their own 99 cents per minute offer, but and they didn't make this clear in their press release. It's per minute billing from for the first minute, and then so it was, and then after that, it's billed in increments of 30 seconds. So effectively, it's more expensive than Cell C's offer.
Indeed.
But the drama then got much more interesting when Icasa, Craig, you got wind from a third party, independent of both of these companies. You got wind that Icasa was unhappy that Vodacom had not filed these new tariffs called Freedom 99 with Icasa as they're required to under regulations, under their operating licenses, I understand.
Indeed.
And Icasa then wrote a letter to Vodacom.
A strongly worded letter.
Strongly worded letter to Vodacom saying that we will seek an urgent interdict in the High Court if you go ahead with the plans to launch this Freedom 99 plan. Vodacom was then forced to put out a retraction to its original press release late on Friday night and to pull all of its advertisements out of the Sunday Times and replace them with alternative advertising and pull the Freedom 99 branding entirely. So it was a bit of an egg on the face moment for Vodacom in their attempt to retaliate against their smaller rival.
Which is also a pity in a sense. I mean, it would have been nice had they been able to respond with something that could have stuck and there could have been the new tariff. And
the tariffs are in effect. They introduced them.
But now is a promotion, which is the suggestion that they'll be retracted at some point. Of course, I'm sure they'll come up with something else to replace them.
Yes.
But it also suggests, though, that I believe those new tariffs have to be filed with the ICASA 7 days beforehand, which suggests that they couldn't have gotten wind of Celsius plans more than a week before, or they would have filed them. But it was also just a pity. I mean, the Vodacom has some other details on the package too. There's 60 free minutes if you recharge with 12 Rand between midnight, the minutes you can use between midnight and 6 a.m. was it, or 5 a.m.
But that's just ridiculous. I mean, who the hell's going to use their phone at that time?
Well, this is the problem. So I've had some people, I said as much. And then some people said to me, oh, well, actually, a large number of, workers get up very early. But I said, this is all good and well that maybe it's good for some people. But the whole thing that makes the Cell C offer so good is the transparency.
Yes.
It's just that this is it. It's really, really simple. Anyone can understand it. This is the rate. Always. Doesn't matter the time of day. Doesn't matter what network you call. And, those Vodacom free minutes, aside from the peculiar time, which is not going to be of much use to most customers. It's only on net, and there's only Vodacom to Vodacom.
So you have to phone someone else who else is on Vodacom, someone else who happens to be awake.
Indeed. I mean, there's just too many qualifiers for it to be possibly seen as a genuine value add. Now, obviously, Vodacom can't cut their rates quite as aggressively as Cell C. Cell C benefits from the asymmetrical termination fees, and that means they pay less to terminate calls on their network than they pay the other operators, the big operators, Vodacom and MTN, to do likewise. And so obviously Vodacom doesn't have this this leverage. But what irked me a little was they're trying to pitch it as a proper equivalent and comeback, when frankly it really isn't. It's subject to the same qualifiers and minutiae that dogs all of the other cell phone providers or network operators at the moment. And this is not what consumers want. They want simple, transparent packages aren't designed to trip them up. And I feel like that's the biggest lesson to learn here too, aside from not leaping too quickly to respond, is when you do respond, it should really be with something that is equitable. Otherwise, don't try and say that it is.
Yes.
Consumers pick up on that sort of thing really, really quickly. And it was interesting to get some comments from other people too about in the industry about what they thought about it. It'll be fun to watch in the rest of the year what the other operators do and how they respond to Cell C. Obviously, Alan Knott-Craig has hit the ground positively sprinting.
Yeah. I mean, I made the point in chatting to Bruce Whitfield on 702 last week about this whole issue. MTN, for one, and I'm sure Vodacom is the same, run very comprehensive, very sophisticated business intelligence systems where they can actually monitor in real time what's happening in terms of their customer churn. So if they notice a sudden move in customers away from their network to Cell C's network, they can react very quickly. They can identify there's a problem, we need to adjust our tariffs, and they'll do so.
Yeah.
So MTN and ATEL are both taking a wait-and-see attitude approach to this thing.
Which is peculiar too, because ATA of the lot can least afford to do it, really. they in many ways are pitching for the same churn customers that Celsi's hoping to attract.
Yeah.
And I feel that ATO should really be responding aggressively, particularly while the network is small and they benefit, as far as I know, my understanding is they also benefit from asymmetrical termination rates.
Although those asymmetric termination rates are actually getting smaller each year.
Indeed, indeed. But ATO really should be jumping to respond because...
they claim that their tariffs... are structured in a way where you get free airtime for every time you place a call, for example.
Indeed.
They claim that their structures are competitive. Their pricing structures are competitive.
At the end of the day, it's how you get this message to consumers. And for a lot of consumers, they're just going to notice, they just want to look at the tariff. What's the base rate? What am I going
to
pay?
I, as a consumer, just want to see what is the rate? What is the advertised rate? What am I going to pay? I don't want to have to worry about what time of the day I'm calling, whether I'm in a high congestion or low congestion base station area.
Absolutely.
To get certain discounts like the MTN zone offer, for example. Vodacom's got one as well. I forget what it's called.
They're just impenetrable. I mean, I've tried to work out some of them with a spreadsheet. And, you know, you wonder how anyone, man on the street, can calculate these sort of things.
Yes.
I mean, frankly, I'm with one of the major operators and I have considered porting to Celsi, except for the fact that we don't have any coverage here.
Yes, indeed.
So I can't, but... otherwise, if we had coverage at the office, I would seriously consider porting my number.
Yes.
And that's really the measure. If you, if you know, are people willing to switch?
Mm.
And if they can keep the rates this competitive, people will be. I certainly will be.
Yeah. Yeah, indeed. Indeed. So, Alan O'Craig, of course. I mean, the really interesting aspect of all of this, of course, is that Peter Ace, the CEO of Vodacom, used to report to Alan O'Craig at Vodacom before Alan left and Peter took over. And now Alan's at Vodacom, a Vodacom competitor, Celsi. So I think there may be some other interesting dynamics at play in this whole thing as well.
Indeed. Well, someone also, another industry person said to me, they said they found it very amusing that... in many ways, Alan O'Craig is now having to dismantle some of the his protections that he put in place during his time at Vodacom to protect profit margins. And now he's picking the same system that he put in place apart.
Yeah. In fact, he was when he was at Vodacom, he was an avid defender of high interconnection rates between the operators. And now in the last week, he's called for a lower termination rates.
Indeed, even lower than the sliding path, I mean, the glide path that ICASA has outlined. Yeah.
So it's dropping to 40 cents next year in March, and Alan O'Craig has called for the rates to drop further beyond that to 25 cents.
Indeed.
I actually asked Peter Ace about that on the Vodacom results teleconference call, and he said that the big effect of interconnection rate cuts has now been felt, so a further cut to 25 cents won't have a big impact on Vodacom.
Interesting.
So
it's going to be a fun space to watch.
My guess is that when ICASA meets after March next year to talk about what happens next, the rates will be coming down again.
Well, here, let's hope so.
Which is great news for smaller operators.
And there's a lot of suggestion that this is what needs to happen and that people need to be competing on things other than price. And that's really, there's a lot of people clamoring and saying that the interconnect rates should really be cost.
Yeah, that's certainly the way they're heading overseas. I mean, if you look at termination rates in the UK, they've I can't remember the exact figures, but they're a fraction of what they are in South Africa, and they're still being cut further.
Indeed. Of course, for high-end users, one of the other issues remains mobile data prices.
Yes.
We really need these to come down because, I mean, I, for one, increasingly, I use traditional network services less and less. I'm spending more and more time using data services like WhatsApp and Viber and these sorts of things to place calls and communicate via messages. And this is really the area I want to see prices come down in is data, because that's where I'm actually spending most of my money now.
Me too. One thing that annoys me about the operators and the operator that I use, for example, is that they penalize their loyal customers. For example, if you want to add a if you want to add a 2 gig bundle onto your contract, you have to pay the full retail price, whereas you can buy a 2 gig contract for a quarter of that on promotion.
Indeed.
So they're really penalizing their loyal customers, and it annoys me.
Well, there are a lot of these sort of problems. Similarly, if you have your phone stolen or similar, unless you're a VIP customer or, you know, on a particularly high contract, you have to pay for a SIM swap.
Yes.
Now, I can buy a new SIM card for 99 cents. Now, I realize this is subsidized by the airtime you're expected to spend on it.
Yeah.
But you would think that the value of keeping a customer would be worth them absorbing the cost of a new SIM card.
Yes.
I mean, to have to pay 100 rand for you to keep my business just seems absolutely ludicrous.
Yeah.
It just makes no sense at all. I actually previously, many years ago, I changed network providers on that very basis. I refused to pay 140 rand for a new SIM card. And so I changed providers by buying a new SIM card for 99 cents. It just seems ludicrous. These are a lot of the little things that I think over time we'd like to see gotten rid of, because operators are going to have to if they're going to need to work harder to keep your keep your business as porting becomes easier. And, and I think this is the sort of thing I really want to see.
Yes. Interesting. I see Samantha Perry has just resigned as editor of Brainstorm.
This is breaking podcast news.
Well, I don't know if news about other journalists' news, but interesting development. Nevertheless, it doesn't say where she's going, though.
It says she'll be working as a freelancer.
Working as a freelancer in 2 months' time. Okay, interesting. Good luck, Sam. moving on. So, Craig, you went to the ICASA hearings a couple of weeks ago. Well, actually, it wasn't the ICASA, it was the ICASA subcommittee on...
That's right, it was the CCC.
The CCC, which sounds very communist.
It does, the Complaints and Compliance Commission.
Committee, wasn't it?
Oh, committee, that's right, yes.
There was a stunning outcome to a complaint that Neotel lodged against Telkom all around access to the local loop.
Indeed. It was an interesting sort of set of events. We didn't really expect too much to come from it. And this battle's been going on for quite a while. Basically, the argument, as I understand it, is that Neotel has been looking to get access to a couple of exchanges, most notably the Rosebank and Benmore exchanges here in Johannesburg. And of course, Benmore, as I think you pointed out, is the busiest exchange in the country and perhaps on the continent. The Benmore in Sandton.
Yes, but it's by far, apparently, from what I hear, it makes most of Telkom's ADSL revenues.
Right. So Neotel's been looking for access to that exchange and the one in Rosebank on the basis of these exchanges being deemed essential facilities under the Electronic Communications Act. And the argument is that in this act, it stipulates that you cannot deny access to essential facilities to other operators. And Neotel was arguing that under this they should be granted access, and Telkom was digging its heels in and saying that they shouldn't. And it's been going back and forth for quite some time. We had some fun and games with it earlier this year when the hearings were postponed because Telkom's senior counsel wasn't available on the day because he was busy with another case, and Telkom's the junior counsel, who had been briefed, didn't want to ask for a postponement as Telkom had ordered, but wanted to instead argue the case. And Telkom, as a result, summarily dismissed the junior counsel because it wouldn't toe the line, which ICASA didn't take to very kindly and said, well, we won't entertain further delays because if we allow this, then in future you can just say, well, we don't like what counsel wants to do, and then you could postpone indefinitely.
Such a funny story, though.
It is absolutely hilarious, but this was genuinely the argument. Was no, we didn't agree, so we sacked them. So we no longer have counsel because we have fired counsel. It was quite staggering.
So,
but
Telkom's counsel was refusing to argue the case that Telkom wanted argued.
That's right. Oh, no, it wanted to argue the case. It was refusing to ask for a postponement, which is what Telkom wanted.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Anyway, so this time around, things seem to have gone ahead, and at least verbally, the committee has ruled in Neotel's favour. Of course, we have to wait now to see everything in writing.
When is that coming out?
I haven't been given a timeline. I have asked, and okay. I've been told hopefully within the next... Oh, this was when this happened last week. Hopefully, they said it should happen within 14 days.
Okay.
Obviously, we'll be keeping a close eye on that. The other thing to wait and see is what how Telkom responds. There's a great deal of pressure from the CCC that ICASA, Telkom, and Neotel should sit down together and just work this out, and that... The CCC is saying that they don't have a legal framework in place because there's no precedent for this sort of arrangement. But they are suggesting that Neotel is correct in its reading of the relevant legislation, and that really the parties should sit down and work out a way to allow Neotel access, and that this needs to be done within 3 months of the ruling. But there is also the option for Telkom to take the ruling on appeal, and they can take it to the courts and
dispute it. Which they no doubt will do.
Because of
the scale of this thing. I mean, it effectively indeed opens up their local loop and could cost them billions of rand. So.
Indeed, and it's simply going to cost them less in legal fees, even though that surely must be racking up quite a bill.
Telkom's legal bill must be massive. I mean, some wag, it was a while ago, but some wag made the comment to me that Telkom is actually a law firm masquerading as a telecommunications operator.
So we can be pretty sure that they're going to appeal this.
Yes.
But it's fascinating. It was a very unexpected outcome. Mm-hmm. And we're going to have to wait and see what comes of it. It would be very surprising if Telkom does agree to play ball.
There's no way.
But at least this is a move in the right direction. It, you know, it certainly bolsters confidence that the CCC agrees with Neotel's reading of the legislation. And
but the funny thing is, this potentially throws the whole local UBAN bundling process out the window, because
indeed,
I mean, this is effective full local UBAN bundling if they won't, but if Telkom was to back down and allow Neotel access to its exchanges. Mm-hmm. In a separate process, ICASA is going through a very cautious approach to local UBAN bundling in only introducing what's called bitstream access later this year, talking about full unbundling probably only to come years down the line, because of the very real concerns that Telkom has raised about the access deficit, mm-hmm. the fact that it loses money on the basic line rental for every line in service on average. You've got this parallel ICASA process, which is effectively recommended full unbundling, although they've sent it back to Telkom, Neotel and ICASA to discuss further.
Yes. And then there's cautious, slow
approach to unbundling on the other hand. So, I don't know, maybe ICASA has almost created a problem for itself here in that, you know, encouraging Neotel, I believe they did so, encouraging Neotel to lodge this complaint in the first place versus the slow, cautious approach that because of the concerns about job losses and the impact on Telkom's financials. It's going to be interesting to see how it plays out anyway. But, Craig, as you say, this whole thing is going to go through the court system.
And unfortunately, that means that we might see unbundling in the slow and gentle sense actually happen first,
because this could be delayed
again for another year or more, potentially, depending how many steps in the appeal process Telkom chooses to take.
Even if Telkom doesn't believe it has a strong case in this Neotel issue, and I'm sure they do believe they have a strong case, but even if they don't think they have a strong case, it's in their interest to take it through the court process, all the way to the Constitutional Court if they need to, because it delays it.
Absolutely, and as long as they delay it, they maintain that, they protect that revenue.
Yes.
Indeed.
Good. What else? It's half an hour to the show already. I think we must be getting wrapped up quite soon. But the other interesting Telkom-related news in the last week has been that Telkom's won the right to appeal against the ZTE urgent interdict that was ZTE Mzansi.
Right.
Complicated story. ZTE Mzansi.
It is complicated.
40% held by China ZTE, 60% held by a local black empowerment company. They took Telkom to court trying to stop them from rolling out this next generation access network that's going to eventually bring fiber to the home and offer much faster fiber to the home, I must qualify in certain instances, but certainly bring much faster DSL access to consumers. That project, very briefly, was awarded to Huawei and Alcatel-Lucent Technologies. ZTE Mzansi then took the matter to the court because they felt that Telkom hadn't followed due process in awarding the contract to its rivals. It was then successful in gaining an urgent interdict was granted against Telkom, forcing the company to stop the rollout of the network. Telkom obviously fought this in the courts, and ZTE then became, I think they call it, a friend of the court on the side of Telkom and against ZTE Mzansi. ZTE then cancelled its agreements with Mzansi, which caused a whole new court battle to unfold. That ruling also came in the last week or so. ZTE lost that case, and the court has ordered the whole issue to go to arbitration in Mauritius. the upshot of Telkom winning leave to appeal in the case with ZTE Mzansi is that they may now continue with the rollout of this next generation network, which apparently is going to cost them in the region of 13 billion rand over the next 5 years. But it's good news that the project at least is going ahead again.
Absolutely.
This is the rollout of what they call MSANs. I think they stand for multi-service access nodes.
They're going to
replace the DSLAMs, or digital subscriber line access multiplexes.
That's the one.
Sure, this industry's full of acronyms. And really shorten the length of copper into Telkom's backbone network. So
one, the exciting thing is we should actually see better performance over DSL. Copper as well.
Yeah.
And of course the option to have fiber where it's appropriate or where it exists, or indeed, where the copper's so badly degraded that it doesn't pay to replace it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Anyway, as you said, the point is that...
The point is the project's going ahead. It's a very convoluted situation, especially since ZTE and its local partner have completely fallen out over the issue and are suing each other's pencils.
Which you can see why. I mean, for ZTE to burn a bridge with Telkom,
yeah.
You know, when they're very eager to get involved in Africa and South Africa in particular.
Yes.
And for these huge projects, I mean, you don't want Telkom to never consider you for business again.
Yes.
You know, they've got to be one of the biggest spenders on infrastructure in the country.
Yeah.
You know, it's not entirely surprising that ZTE has sought to distance itself from ZTE and Mzansi over this.
Yes, indeed.
But yeah, fascinating.
It's fascinating story, yeah.
Practically a soap opera in its proportions. It's amazing.
Yeah.
But we'll keep a close eye on that one,
too. We will indeed. But we really have run out of time. I wanted to talk about everything from hybrid cars to job cuts at HP and RIM, but I think we'll leave some of those topics for our next podcast. Just before we sign off, our picks of the week this week. Craig, what have you got?
So, as usual, I have an iOS app just to keep things consistent with previous weeks.
I have an Android app, so that's fine. So
this is ideal.
We really do need to come up with some Windows Phone apps, though.
We do. Well, they need to come up with some apps for us to look at, yes.
Yes. Actually, we need a Windows Phone device to look at them first.
That would help, too, yeah. The app I'm looking at this week is OLX. And it's the classifieds service that Naspers bought a stake in.
Or as the Americans call them, Naspers.
That's the one. and it's a very stripped down, very basic classified service, but that's part of its charm. It's just really easy to use. It's designed, I gather, mostly for iPad use. And the idea is, aside from being able to browse other people's exercise bikes and bird cages and fish tanks and whatever else it is that they've got that they want to flog, you can list your own items. There's no charge to do so. And it integrates really well with the iPad hardware. So you can actually use the, granted, not excellent camera, unless it's the new iPad, to take photos of the items you want to sell. And you can really get an ad up in no time at all. There's a great deal of, I was amazed actually looking at it earlier, just how much stuff is already on there. When you consider, you know, how long things like BidAllBuy have been running, I'm not sure how long this OLX has been running in South Africa, but you know, you get the impression that this particular form of it is quite new.
I've noticed they've been advertising quite aggressively on television recently.
I believe, and on YouTube, I've heard talk of ads popping up there for it as well, but certainly they've thrown their thrown sort of quite a lot of money behind the service, and their clout behind it. And it's just really simple. It really does what it says in the box, and we like that when it comes to any app.
So how do they make money?
Through advertising. They've just got banner ads in some of the listings when you do a search and so on, in some of the categories.
So there's no charge to buyer or seller?
No, which is you know, rather different from things like BidAllBuy. And I think what will attract people too is just the ease of use.
Yes.
The fact that you can snap an image and put it up in no time at all. I find that's one of the obstacles for me listing things on other sites.
Do they facilitate the delivery of the products that are being sold?
Well, that's the problem. It is really just a classified service.
Okay.
So you're responsible for dealing with people in between.
You contact the seller or the buyer.
No, indeed. So you can contact each other directly. So there certainly aren't the checks and measures in place that you get on auction sites like BidAllBuy or the sort of protection. But, you know, for people who were thinking of just using the junk mail or similar otherwise, or services like Gumtree, this is probably going to impact how many users they see.
Okay.
And it's, free to download in the Apple App Store.
Is it available? I mean, it's available for Android and other platforms as well, surely?
No, at the moment it's only for iOS. Yeah. I'm sure it'll come to the others shortly.
Okay.
But at the moment it's only iOS.
Okay, interesting. Cool. My pick of the week, my app of the week. Craig, have you ever walking along the road, looking at your phone, and walk straight into a tree or some other
obstacle? Just about. Usually other people, but yeah.
I do it all the time. There's a very cool new app I found for Android, and I must apologize, I haven't checked if it's available for other platforms. It may very well be, but it's an app called Live SMS. Basically, what it does is it uses the camera on your smartphone when you fire up your SMS app. Pity it doesn't work for things like WhatsApp and that sort of thing. But when you fire up your SMS app and you're typing away in a message, it actually shows you what's happening behind your phone. It's using the phone's camera. So it's like a transparent background.
Right, so you sort of type on a live background.
It's a live background of where you're walking. So as you type, you can make sure you don't walk into a tree or get hit by a bus or something else. I do it all the time. Usually I trip over my dogs because I'm too busy looking at my phone. But I think it's quite a cool idea. I just wish it was, as I say, I wish it was available for, you know, web browsing and for WhatsApp and for these other apps where you're always just staring at your device all the time.
Someone will come up with one that does integrate across platform,
I'm sure they will. But quite a cool app. It's in the Android Play Market, and it's called Live SMS, one word. Craig, I think that's all the time we have for this week.
And a little bit more, just
and a little bit more thrown on the top.
Make up for the gap between the last one.
Yep. We always say we'll record the next one soon enough, and we'll definitely try and do that this time. No guarantees. given our past our track record.
Well, unfortunately, sometimes the news gets in the way.
Indeed. Good. As always, if you've got any feedback on the show, you can send us an email at info@techcentral.co.za. From Craig and myself. Megan, myself.
From my Craig.
My Craig. Is that a new social?
And your Duncan.
Is that a new social website? From Craig and myself, Duncan, have a great week, and we'll chat you again soon. Cheers.